Coming up on Tech News Today, Microsoft shows off its new Windows 10 Creators Update. Tesla's auto steer can now go 80 miles per hour. That's just 8 shy of achieving flux capacitor requirements for time travel. Also, Google opens up about all of its open source projects, big and small, and Samsung moves on from the Note 7 by unveiling the Galaxy S8, now with Infinity Display. All that and more coming up next on Tech News Today.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CashFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Tech News Today, episode 1735, recorded Wednesday, March 29th, 2017.
For real.
Welcome to Tech News Today. This is the show where we tell you everything you need to know about technology today. I am Megan Maroney, and look who's back.
Hi. My name is Jason Howell. Nice to meet you. I hope you are okay with me returning to the show, because I was gone for a week and a half. I actually had a nightmare. On my vacation, I don't know what this means, I had a nightmare that I was replaced on the show permanently.
Sad.
And a part of me was missing because I didn't have my Tech News Today.
Yeah, we're not going to replace you for at least a couple more weeks.
Okay, perfect. Okay. That's all I ask. All I need are a couple of more weeks. And then the news is going to get boring anyway. So it'll be all good. It's going to be back.
All right, let's get to the news. Windows 10 Creators Update. Get ready for it. You cannot get it right now, but you can get it soon. And we're pretty sure we know when you're going to be able to get it, April 11th. And if you have an Xbox, you're in luck, because Xbox Windows 10 Creators Update is out now. And that Xbox update includes many useful features, including easy ways to stream your own gameplay and a tool called Copilot that helps you teach non-gamers how to play certain games with a little help. Windows insiders who've already gotten their hands on the update for Windows 10 say it's not very creative, despite its name, although it is called Creators Update without an apostrophe before the S. So maybe that's what they meant by creative.
Creative non-use of the apostrophe.
So the Xbox, the Copilot, I found this really interesting because I hosted Windows Weekly for Leo today. And Paul Thurrott explained it as, you know, when you're learning to drive and sometimes in the driver's ed cars, there's a steering wheel in both sides. So that's what the Copilot thing is. So if you were like teaching your child or your parent or someone like me how to play a game, you can help them along. The two controllers both control the game.
Actually, that would be really handy if my kid was really into Minecraft and I am as clueless as I am about Minecraft. They could teach me how to play it too.
Right. Yeah. Or like if you were like a serious gaming mom or dad and you were just like, you're doing it wrong. I'm going to take over.
Here, let me show you how you destroy this person. I mean, it's interesting that it's called the Creators Update, because it really does seem like, I mean, I guess it's all tangentially related to creating, right? There's the gaming aspect, there's improvements for, or they're kind of details that are added in for Microsoft's mixed and virtual reality headsets for developers to tap into. So that could be creative, especially as you know, we get further into this mixed and virtual reality world and Microsoft gets further ingrained in it. That gives developers tools to do some really cool things in a new way and be creative there. There's also a game mode that I guess adjusts processor, like processing behind the scenes, cores, background tasks, and that sort of stuff to ultimately make games perform better. But a couple of the reviews that I read were like, okay, so that exists, and I've tested it, and I see no improvement. I don't know. It seemed, actually, to be honest, in a lot of what I read about this, it seemed very ho-hum. Like, oh, okay, well, we played with it, and okay.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, I think one of the big features was getting your getting more control of your updates. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that was a big pain point for a lot of people, where they would not want the update and then click the X, and that would automatically schedule the update. And so as long as you update to Windows 10 Creator Edition when they want you to, how they want you to, then after that, you can update however you want to. But you should update.
3D Paint, that's in there. That's like the one thing that's like obviously for creators or creative. You know, it's a creative tool to paint in three dimensions, and that's pretty cool.
Yeah, and you could still use regular Microsoft Paint, because apparently a lot of people still do. That's not going away.
Apparently they do, because I see a lot of that stuff shared on social networks. where they really didn't spend a whole lot of time putting those words on that on top of that image. I'm pretty sure it came from MS Paint. But yeah, good stuff. Built-in night shift mode for reducing blue light after dark. Ultimately, it kind of seems like a lot of like a decent amount of incremental things. Nothing major. Nothing like you're going to fire up Windows 10 after the update and be like, wow, everything changed. You know, it's a new design paradigm. Nothing like that. Yeah. I don't think it promised to be that anyway. So.
I don't think so either. But a lot of people have been talking about how it's going to steal away all the creators, the creative people that use Macs now. And I don't know if that's going to happen either. And Paul Thurrott also had a good point today by saying, you know, was there particular software that was only available on the Mac that got creative people to use the Mac? Or was it just the whole ethos of Apple that made more creatives? You're a creative person. I mean, was there software that, because you're a musician, you make music.
Yeah.
Was it just the Apple ethos that got you on a Mac? Or was it there's particular software that never worked on Windows?
I would say for me personally, and I imagine this could be part of it, is just the fact that I wanted to spend less time. Ultimately, I switched from Windows to Mac for music production because I felt like it was a way to ensure that I spent less time working on the things behind the scenes, driver issues, getting this piece of hardware to talk to this piece of software and that kind of stuff. I found that Mac was better at that, was better, a little bit more seamless in integrating, you know, hardware or software. And also I felt a little bit more inspired, and maybe it was because it was something new, but I felt inspired by the actual presentation, the way it looked. And the way things kind of moved, I mean, it just, which is a weird thing to say that like looking at an OS is inspiring, you know, in the aspect of being creative. But I got creative working in the Mac OS environment when I first switched over, whereas Windows, I just felt was really not elegant at all. And that didn't inspire me to want to sit down and work with it for long stretches of time.
That makes sense.
So I guess kind of. I guess that's probably somewhat true. Mobile analytics firm App Annie is projecting that Android will lead in app-based revenue this year, which would be the first time Google's mobile OS would surpass Apple's lead in this regard. However, that includes revenue from all app stores, not just Google's own official Google Play Store. Third-party stores include those by Xiaomi, Huawei, Baidu, and Tencent, among others, which is to say that this is still a big milestone for Android as a whole. If it happens, I mean, this is their projection that it will happen, but not so much for Google itself. I think the Play Store still would have a ways to go to compete with Apple as far as revenue is concerned. I mean the big, you know, key here is growth in markets like China, especially China. Huge reason for the bump. And Google Play is not even there. Google's really tried hard to get Play Store in China. It requires a lot of I don't know, just kind of a lot of bending over backwards in order to kind of change how they work in order to make it in that market. China demands certain things that Google may be unwilling to give.
Mm-hmm. So $40 billion is what the iOS App Store earned versus $41 billion for Android apps, including all those other stores you just talked about. $10 billion of that was from Tencent, Baidu, Xiaomi, Huawei, the ones you mentioned. I know there was also the question of if you're going to buy a more expensive phone, are you less willing to pay for apps too? Like that was what someone posed that question online when I was doing the research. And I wonder that, you know, if you're like, I'm buying a $1,000 iPhone. Like, do I really need to, you know, pay for all these apps?
Versus, or are you more inclined?
I don't know. That's a good question.
Because if you have the expendable, if you have the money to throw at an expensive phone, then, I would guess that if you have $1,000 to throw at a phone, that's not the only $1,000 that you have. Mm-hmm. You're willing to give that up because you have room for it. And if you have room for that much when there are much less expensive options out there, then maybe you could assume that you probably have, you know, it's less of a distraction or a detraction to actually pay for apps.
Yeah, I don't know, but that's not necessarily how people react, you know, buy things. Like a lot of really wealthy people are cheap, you know, just
that's true
for
that's
whatever true. Reason. So yeah, I don't know.
Frugal. Frugal.
The other question is about beta testing, how that's harder too. I didn't know this before, but if you want to beta test an Android app, you can beta test with as many people as you want. But if you're beta testing an iOS app, you're limited to 2,000 beta testers.
Oh, that's interesting. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Google is very accommodating to the whole beta testing aspect on Android. And that's actually a pretty recent development over the last couple of years. They've really built that out, but to a good place, especially in comparison. So that's a really good point.
Tesla has released an update to Autopilot 2.0 that improves the car's semi-autonomous driving features, but do not fall asleep at the wheel just yet, please.
Sorry,
you can fall asleep over there. You're not driving. Take okay. a nap. We'll be back to you in a minute.
All right.
You can use the auto steer feature at up to 80 miles per hour. Previously, it was limited to 55 miles per hour. So the cameras in the Model S will need calibration, they say, before they can be used at this speed. And Summon, that's the tool where you can use an app to have your car drive to you. That's also available on Autopilot 2.0. Previously, it was only available to Autopilot 1.0. And there are some additional Tesla updates to things other than Autopilot 2.0 as well.
Yeah, I mean, they have to continue to kind of rebuild some of these features, you know, get back up onto par with Autopilot 1.0. That's primarily because, you know, different sensors, hardware, different computing hardware behind the scenes. And so they kind of have to build that up. Ultimately, though, the grand payoff is that this new hardware combination will eventually allow for fully autonomous driving in comparison. Who knows when that's going to happen or when we get there, but we know that that's Tesla's end game as far as this is concerned. So, increasing the speed that's capable for auto steer is definitely a good step in the right direction to bring it back on par. And that's all we got with that. Google has a rich history when it comes to open source. After all, many of Google's biggest efforts like Chrome OS and Android are based on Linux. Google just launched a new site that brings all of its many open source initiatives under one roof. Google Open Source, which you can find at opensource.google.com, shows the company's dedication to open source by showcasing projects, you know, Chromium, Android, TensorFlow, just to name a few, and a whole lot more there. Google says its goal is to help its users, quote, find interesting open source. And I think really what this is all about is that Google has so much happening in this realm in open source. It's practically impossible to track it all, you know, if you're on the outside looking in. So they're doing all the hard work, single point of cataloging all this stuff. You know, they have big projects in open source. They have tons of experimental projects. This is just like one place to capture it all so that those who are interested in learning more about how Google tackles open source, but also just open source in general and why it's a good direction for companies to do this. Here you go.
I spent an inordinate amount of time looking through this website today and coming up with looking at all the crazy names for their open source projects.
Uh-huh.
They're the only thing I compare it to is the Vault 7 names that, from WikiLeaks. Squid Proxy, that was my favorite. That's how you, Squid Warden. Squid Warden is how you manage your whitelist for your Squid Proxy. Everyone knows that, obviously.
Everybody knows that.
Light My Piano, I don't even know what that does. Neuroglancer.
Light Your Piano, of course.
Neuroglancer. There's one called Copybara. Which I really liked. I think that, so this isn't like GitHub. GitHub actually has, it's a repository of code. This is just a directory of the projects. So, if you don't have time to spare, do not go to opensource.google.com because you will spend some time there.
Showing how their code, it's also kind of like an interesting education in not only the projects that they're doing around open source, but kind of their rationale, their thinking behind why open source is so at the core of what Google is doing, how they manage their code, how they integrate external code and bring that into their projects. Just basically, like I said, the reasons behind why open source is so important to Google. And I mean, Google, you know, it was born on open source projects years and years ago. So there you go. It's a good place to kind of learn a little bit about open source. I think a lot of us are using open source whether we realize it or not. Mm-hmm. And this is a way to kind of shine a light on that.
Uber competitor Lyft thinks the future of ride sharing is actual ride sharing. The company just announced a new shuttle service that plans to disrupt public transportation. Lyft Line is a ride sharing app for commuters that operates along a set route with specific pickup and drop off points, you know, sort of like a bus, but, you know, that you're not organized or on time enough to ride, so you call an Uber. So yeah, I think this has been tried before, not by a big company by like Lyft. There's been lots of startups that have tried to sort of disrupt the bus system. I'm all for people commuting together, saves the environment. And, you know, we've talked about how difficult it is for us here in the outskirts of town to use public transportation. So this is really for the cities. They're testing it in San Francisco and Chicago. And, yeah, if you can use it, great. I think there's been some issues also with startups like app Uber, but for buses, where it's, you know, there's been snacks and it's only white people and lots of tech bros. And it's just like a little bit more expensive than the bus. And which it makes it hard. Like there was one bus, you know, one startup like this that I think would park in the Muni spots and then the Muni couldn't park and just made it more difficult for everyone else who was trying to ride public transportation. So hopefully Lyft has learned from that and won't do something like that again.
Yeah. So it runs during commute hours, primarily 6:30 to 10 a.m. in the morning and then 4 to 8 p.m. And generally those are times that Lyft's prices shoot up because they're high demand times. But with shuttle, apparently they're offering a fixed rate. So it, even if that kind of surge style pricing is happening at that moment, if you're using shuttle, it's kind of, it's locked in at the price that you're quoted. And, I don't know. I think it's an interesting addendum. You know, we'll see how far and wide it actually rolls out. Because like you say, it needs to have a certain level of support in kind of these bigger, I would imagine, metropolitan areas, you know, that they're servicing. Probably not going to get it out in Petaluma.
No. But I guess, so it says on
this, there's got to be a lot of people along that route.
Right. I mean, it's for people commuting all in one direction.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, we should have one just for Twit, like wide room, pick up everybody at their house.
Oh, I'm sure that there's so much incentive for Lyft to get in on that.
Yeah, totally.
All 20-something of us.
Yes. Well, it says 60% less. That's what it says. And I assume they mean than actually taking a Lyft, not than taking the bus that probably also goes, you know, close enough from where you live to your office if you're in Chicago or San Francisco. So, yeah, my only worry for this is that it's going to be slightly, you know, it's great for anyone who can afford it, but it, you know, it just makes it harder. I would like to see someone disrupt the actual bus system and make it easier for not, you know, people that work at startups and make a lot of money.
Commuter buses don't pick you up at your front door.
Well, I know.
So there's that.
I know. No, not pick you up at your front door. But if you live in the city, you probably don't live. I mean, when we lived in San Francisco, you never lived that far away from a bus.
No,
it might
it's
not
totally
be the
true.
Bus that you totally needed.
True.
But, you know.
And it was just part and parcel of living in the city. And you were very used to it. But, you know, tech bros get spoiled, apparently. And they need... They need something just a little more pricey, but they,
right.
You know what I mean? A little bit more comfortable.
Well, it seems like they're gentrifying the bus. That's what I'm trying to say.
Right.
And I don't love it.
Okay. Well, also, you know, maybe one of these days one of us will ride it and we'll be able to report back. Probably not. We're in Petaluma after all. Samsung held its big flagship event to unveil new hardware this morning. Ron Richards and myself were on hand covering the announcement live, and there was a lot of stuff. A lot of announcements throughout the show this morning, probably about an hour and a half long event. Samsung was relatively restrained. They've had issues in the past of totally going big and crazy with their events. They peeled it back. I give them props for that. They've been doing good with that lately. But here's what Samsung showed off first. The eagerly anticipated, if not totally leaked already, Galaxy S8 with a 5.8-inch display for the S8, and then the S8 Plus is a larger 6.2-inch display. Scratch that. Infinity display, as Samsung put it, which is basically new marketing around what it used to call its edge display. So it's kind of like the curved off the sides sort of thing, kicking out the bezels as they showed in their promo video. The home button, which has become a signature of their design, is no longer evident. It's no longer shown as a hardware button on the front, as you can see here, but it's moved behind the front display. similar in ways to Apple's 3D touch. So it's pressure sensitive. So you press in the glass where you know the home button is, and the harder you press, the more it's going to register that. That's always on and always active, waiting for your press. The phone's design is rounded. It's curved throughout with an improved front-facing camera, iris scanning, facial recognition, and the company also touted its new 10-nanometer processor for better efficiency and power in a smaller space. So I think the phone looks really nice. I think it's a sharp-looking device, and I can't wait to get my hands on it.
Plus, you can get it in orchid gray.
Orchid gray, I know.
Otherwise known as purple.
Right. Well, they always have to come up with their crazy names for these colors. I mean, yeah, that makes sense. You wish you had orchid gray.
I do wish I had an orchid gray, but only I would know because I put a case on it. So, as
that's
you
true.
Should as
well. That's the thing, right? Like, this thing is curved all around, glass everywhere. Like, oh, it's kind of a nightmare for me. Nightmare scenario. I would destroy that thing in a heartbeat.
So I have a question for
without
you.
Without a case.
Every year, usually they announce the new Samsung flagship phone in, you know, at the same time as Mobile World Congress. They put it off a little, and then there's all these headlines, it's going to kill the iPhone. This is the phone that's going to, you know, do in Apple. And then, you know, a few months later, they announce the new iPhone, and everyone, you know, forgets, and it doesn't, in fact, kill the iPhone.
Mm-hmm.
Is that an accurate description? I mean, does it feel like deja vu? Does it feel like they say that every year?
I mean, I think people do say that. I think it's a great way to get people to read articles and everything to say yeah. that. Like, I mean, the reality is that there are people that are Samsung that will always be Samsung. There are people that are iPhone or iOS that will always be iOS. And then there are people that will float between the two. Mm-hmm. I don't think that there will be one that reigns supreme over the other. In the Android world, it just turns out that, you know, Samsung pretty much dominates in the Android world. And then iOS, iPhone is obviously, it's no slouch. It's awesome, and it does really well. So, you know, there's room for both, and there's always going to be those articles because it's really fun to pit devices, you know, pit two companies against each other.
It is fun.
See?
It's true.
It's a good discussion to be had. And I mean, it's also a legacy discussion. When the iPhone first came out, there was, okay, well, we've heard about this Android. Is this going to be, you know, kill the iPhone? I've been hearing about iPhone killer since the moment, you know, Android began and iPhone began. It's just the way it is, and I don't think it's going away. But I don't think it's absolutely necessary or accurate reflection of what's happening here. Samsung's still putting out amazing hardware. I mean, this thing looks really nice, and they've done a really great job with kind of putting in meaningful features, which hasn't always been the case with Samsung, in my opinion. A lot of times they put in these features that may look good on paper or may look good demonstrated on a stage, but then when you get it, you have a really hard time understanding why you would ever use it,
mm-hmm.
you know, getting in the habit of it or whatever. So they're starting to make more meaningful changes. Improved 8-megapixel front-facing camera. So higher resolution front-facing camera with autofocus face detection, because they say, hey, people are taking a lot of selfies. Might as well make them look good. Mobile HDR display. Mobile HDR premium certification. First device to have that. So high dynamic range on the phone. Samsung always has great-looking displays on their flagships. Really curious to see what it looks like.
And so the Pixel does not have a physical home button, right?
No.
Does it have a home button at all?
So the fingerprint sensor on the back, even in a screen off state, I can just touch that with my finger. And that could be considered a home button. Although if I'm on a different screen and I touch the fingerprint sensor, that's not going to take me home. It will show you all my notifications. Check that out. And no, it doesn't. I mean, it's a software. It's more of a capacitive home button down at the bottom
right.
there, as you can see. I can tap that. If I
right, yeah, now I remember. Yeah, I'm interested in what you'll think of that home button, the fake sort of 3D touch home button on the Samsung phone.
I really liked 3D touch on the iPhone,
yeah.
which was one thing that I did not expect to really use that much.
Mm-hmm.
So when I saw this, I was like, bravo. Like, yeah. I would love to see more of that.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's like magic, because whenever my phone is off and I try to press the button, which is not a button,
right.
and I realize it's not a button, and it's like, oh, you really get tricked into believing that this is a home mm-hmm. button and that you're pushing something when it's not, you're not really pushing anything. It's
right.
crazy.
Yeah, it's cool like that. I mean, and that's that shows that it works, right? Mm-hmm. S8 is $750, S8 Plus $850. Pre-orders start tomorrow. If you pre-order, well, I'll get to that in a second. You get a little gift, but it releases April 21st. Other announcements from the event include the Samsung DeX that docks your phone, your Samsung Galaxy S8, for a desktop environment using an attached monitor, keyboard, and mouse. It's like a little hockey puck that you deck the phone into if you've got all the components plugged into it. It even has an Ethernet port on the back of it. So basically what they're showing here is that your Galaxy S8 can also work in a desktop style environment. So you pop it in there, and then on your monitor, everything, the contents and apps on your phone now transform into more of a desktop style presentation on the screen, and you can use it as if you were using a desktop computer.
Okay, so I have become sort of obsessed with this idea that tech companies are trying to convince us that they've just created the thing that we have always wanted, and whereas they are really creating the thing that somehow makes them the most money.
Well,
and
yeah,
then they're
right.
trying to convince us that you have always wanted this, and
you're
this
gonna
is sort
love
of
it.
Like continuum. Like I can't quite figure out why I would want this. Like DeX. Like I like having a laptop. I can hook the laptop up to a monitor. I can hook it up to a mouse. I can hook it up to a keyboard if I want to. I understand that this is for the enterprise environment, so I could, but how would I do the work at home and in the enterprise? Like, how would I hook it up in both places?
You'd have to have two DeX or bring the DeX with you. And that's where it kind of falls apart for me too. Right. Right. Like, I guess if I had two of these, one at home and one at work with their own monitor, keyboard, and mouse plugged into it. And then I get home and I go and I use it there, and then I get to work and I do the same thing. I guess then I just don't see many people wanting to do that. Earlier today on This Week in Google, Jeff Jarvis made the point that you just made, is that this would be perfect for the enterprise, right? Or like the traveling business person that goes somewhere and wants to be a little bit more portable. But I just see the requirement of, okay, but then you have to make sure that where you go, you have a monitor, keyboard, and mouse, and plug it all into the thing that you just brought with you. Like, that just seems like so much more trouble to me than, like you say, just having a light and thin laptop in my bag that I can just go and get to work on.
Yeah.
And not to mention macOS, Windows. These are desktop environments that have seasoned, rich histories of building up their platforms for that specifically. And then, here's Samsung's version of it that they just did for this release of the Galaxy. I'm just not convinced that I'm going to enjoy that experience mm-hmm. as much as I will enjoy something that has been worked on for as long as, the other ones have and that I'm so used to already.
Yeah.
But maybe that's just me being a curmudgeon. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. I feel like because when I first saw this, I was like, that's amazing. I love that
it's
idea.
Cool, you can do it.
But then what I was thinking about, then I was like, what's the real problem here? My problem is I'm somewhere, I have an extra half hour that I didn't know what I was going to have. I'm going to actually do some work.
Mm-hmm.
But I have to do it on this tiny device. And wouldn't it be great if this tiny device had a monitor and a keyboard and would help like make it somehow bigger so that I can use Google Docs or, whatever it is. But that this doesn't solve that problem.
You still need those other things.
Yeah.
Too.
Still. And so really thinking it through, like you need your laptop. You don't need an extra monitor and a DeX.
Yeah.
Because the other idea is, okay, well, I'm working at home and I'm going to take my stuff from home and bring it to work. Well, everything's in the cloud now. You don't need that either.
Yeah, I know, right? Like this is a Chromebook Pixel. And like, I don't store anything locally on this. I open mm-hmm. it up. I log into my, I don't even, I put in my Google password and boom, I have access to everything I need. It's already in the cloud. And I don't know. Jury's out on this. There have been other solutions to this in Android, specifically Motorola had the Atrix that had a keyboard dock or a dock very similar to this. And this was years ago. I think it was like 2012-ish time. And even then it was like, okay, cool that you can do that. Don't get me wrong. I'm all down for innovation, and maybe this is the future and we're just too early on the curve. But right now, I just don't know if it necessarily fulfills or satisfies what it promises to do for me. Maybe it does for somebody, but not for me. And rounding out the announcements, Samsung showed off its Samsung Connect home router that includes support for SmartThings, IoT devices, out of the box, of course, as Samsung acquired SmartThings a while back. So they are very tuned into making this a router not only for your internet, but also for controlling your smart home with SmartThings and a few other IoT devices there. Samsung also updated its Gear 360 spherical camera. Now supports full 4K resolution. I guess before it was supporting 90% 4K resolution. Never heard of that before, but there you go. As well as, this is pretty cool, live streaming support. So you can now live stream to Facebook in 360, also YouTube, also directly to this next piece of hardware, the Gear VR that's been updated to include a new motion controller a la Daydream View. And actually, the controller looks similar in ways to the Oculus Touch because, you know, this is an Oculus device after all. But it does cost a steeper $129 thanks to that added hardware, which you can buy separately for $30. So they're marking it up the exact price of the controller over the previous model, which was $100. So there you go.
Good stuff.
Lots of stuff.
You'll get it all, I'm sure.
Lots of stuff. Yeah, well, I'll definitely get a phone, one of the phones. I'm not sure if I'm going to get the larger one or the smaller one. I'll probably end up getting the larger one because I'm a big guy. But I'll get that. And if you pre-order the Samsung Galaxy S8, you get one of the new Gear VRs included. Hmm. So pre-order. If you think you're going to get one, make sure you get your pre-order in and you can get in on that.
Awesome. Well, it's feedback time. Paul Roselle writes about the conversation that we had yesterday about the collapse of the broadband privacy bill. He writes, what if you used a VPN to mask your browsing history from the ISP? All they would see is that you spent a lot of time connected to a certain IP address. Of course, you'd have to be able to trust that VPN provider, and it would cost more, but maybe that price would end up being competitive with the privacy fee some smaller ISPs may plan to offer. So this was a conversation. I know you've read the news, mm-hmm. but we talked back and forth about, you know, maybe you'll eventually have to just pay for, you know, your ISP a little more and your ISP won't sell your data. So wouldn't a VPN work for this?
Yeah. I mean, what they see is that they see when you connect via their domain name server, their DNS. And so if you're using a VPN, it's certainly masking that. Paul raises the point, and it's definitely a very good point, right? Like, do you trust your VPN provider? There are tons of VPN providers out there. Some are free, some are paid. The overarching kind of suggestion is that you probably want to go with something that's paid, because as they say, if it's free, then you're probably the product. And if you're talking about VPN, that's probably not a good thing because you don't want that kind of tracking. That's what you're trying to avoid. So don't become the product with your VPN provider. So find one that you trust. But historically, it's very difficult to know exactly. You know, a VPN provider could say that they don't keep logs, and then they do. So, you know, you can look at a court rulings or whatever that might include some information that could send clues, and you know, some VPN providers are apparently better than others in that regard. It's just kind of murky water. Mm-hmm. Hard to know which ones you would trust in this regard, but that would certainly help. By the way, I mean, so this hasn't even gone into effect yet, right? Like, these rules would go into effect at the end of this year. So essentially what this means is that there's no change from what we've already been experiencing and what's already been happening. There's a lot of, a lot of people are obviously up in arms, and rightfully so, about the fact that they're selling out our privacy. It's a bummer that we didn't quite get there with this, but apparently there are ways to peel back that control by logging into your ISP's sites. And sometimes they make it hard. Sometimes they hide that information in there and make it challenging, but you can go in there. I put a link to a Popular Mechanics article in here that we talked about a little bit earlier today on This Week in Google, and it kind of details a little bit about how you can go into your major ISPs and find the parts of their settings where you can kind of opt out of this essentially and turn off that sharing for the most part. So maybe that'll change in the future. I don't know, but
Yeah. I mean, I think the simple fact for me is that our personal information, where we browse, our mapping information, that is all worth a lot of money.
Yeah. Like
that is, and it's ours. Mm-hmm. And they can now take it without even asking us. And there were people, elected representatives, that said that that was okay. And for no other reason than I feel that they were lobbyists, you know, that forced them, that convinced them, convinced them to vote this way. And it's really frustrating. I know it's not a life or death thing. You know, it's not healthcare, it's not immigration, but it is still super frustrating that there were all these votes against something that I feel like shouldn't be. I mean, we have to, I feel like we have to have internet access. And so therefore we have to give out all this information without, you know, getting anything back for it.
Yeah, especially when it's under the guise of, you know, protecting users and, you know, and securing their privacy and stuff. It's unfortunate that money in many ways is more important to a lot of people than kind of protecting people themselves. So TNT's fan of the day is Dean Fordham on Twitter, who shared this picture that definitely shows, if nothing else, A, that Dean is waiting patiently for Tech News Today to begin, but B, Dean has an affinity for Star Wars. I think that's pretty apparent.
Yeah, I went back and forth a bit with Dean on Twitter. That helmet there is wearable. now we can't see it so much, but yeah.
The Boba Fett helmet?
Yes, you can put it on your head and wear it.
It looks kind of small.
Well, I don't know how...
Would you wear it as a hat?
You have no reference point. You don't know how big that desk is or how big that monitor is.
That's true.
It could be giant.
I like thinking of the Boba Fett helmet as like a hat that rests on the top of your head.
Yeah. And Dean also said that he bought your album.
Oh.
I don't know if it's on the shelf there. Now I can't remember, but if it's on the shelf in the picture, can we see the picture again, Brian?
Oh.
Okay. Is there?
Did he say that it was?
I don't remember now, but is there? Maybe it was on. Maybe he's going to send us another
scanning,
one.
Scanning.
Let's go ahead and read his journal there too. Yeah. Get in there.
Go in there. Enhance. There's something written on that pad.
Okay. Maybe Dean was going to send us another photo.
Oh, that's awesome.
But yeah, he did buy your album, and I'm sure he will buy your next one.
Oh, fantastic.
Which will come out soon because you're not on Facebook wasting your time anymore, right?
It's true. I'm spending a lot of time on music lately. I'm really happy about that. And, you know, it coincides with not spending time on Facebook. I'm not sure if there's a direct cause and effect there, but I'm going with it. I haven't been back to Facebook, and I continue to write more music. So there we go. So that's awesome. Thank you, Paul. Or thank you, Dean. Appreciate that.
And you can show us how you watch or listen to TNT.
Right.
Record a video, take a picture of yourself, your setup, post it on Instagram, Google+, Twitter, Facebook. It does not have to include anything that we created that you purchased, but it can.
No.
And it does have to actually include a wearable, a hat, you know, helmets from Star Wars.
Yeah.
And it has to include the How I Watch hashtag, How I Watch TNT.
That's the most important thing, How I Watch TNT. Mm-hmm. Please put that there.
So it's time again to talk about the broadband privacy bill, because I'm not going to stop talking about it. I can't take it. I don't have to take this anymore. So you know who else doesn't have to take it? Peter Rudwa, to protest the vote to overturn the broadband privacy bill in the U.S. Peter Rudwa, he's a 31-year-old creative director at an ad agency. He has put his entire browsing history up for sale on eBay. The privacy bill that was outvoted in the House and the Senate obviously would have made it harder for ISPs like Comcast to sell our data to third parties. But now it's gone. Now that privacy bill is gone, all we can do is sell our own personal data to lower its value for everyone else. His was and is the highest bid is $16.50. But it looks like Brian thinks that Peter's browsing
history. He's like, I don't care if it's $16.50, $1 million.
I would pay a lot for your browsing history.
Really?
I think that, yeah.
I just don't want to see anybody's browsing history. I don't care. I don't want to go there. I just want to like people for people. Although, Shorts, we were talking about this before the show. Shorts was a social network for streaming your camera roll to mm-hmm. the world.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one way that you can use social networks to totally destroy your own privacy.
Mm.
Talk Show was a social network for streaming your messaging threads mm-hmm. to the world. Maybe there needs to be a social network where we stream our browser history to the world.
Yeah. Well, you know, there was also the story that you might have missed. Docs.com was a Microsoft service that you...
Is a Microsoft service
that you can upload docs, documents, and they can be searched from the public. Many people upload documents of their passwords, obviously, yeah, to make their data worth less to
I'm
the general
guessing
public.
They didn't know they were doing that, but it happened a lot, apparently.
Yeah, so yeah, there's all kinds of places. Yeah. We should all just give... No, this isn't what we should do. We need to protect our privacy. I don't know who we tell now. I don't know what to do next.
Log into your ISP site.
Oh, right.
Find the thing.
Well, Sonic, who is one of our advertisers, fought against this bill, and now they are my broadband provider, and I'm super excited about that. And they're a sponsor of the network, but they don't pay for my personal at home. You know, I pay for that myself.
Is kind of the thing that's Sonic, as one example, does. And there are a lot of ISPs. I know that there are other ISPs out there. What is it, Monkey Brains?
Monkey Brains,
is another one, and they're devoted to, I don't know, kind of pushing back on this kind of thought that ISPs have the ability and use it without a thought of analyzing and making money off of, you know, the activity of their users.
But you know what's not available, what's available everywhere is Comcast, and they don't, you know, like those sites aren't available.
I know,
those services aren't available everywhere. So
that's exactly the challenge. Not all markets have access to, you know, some markets have access to an ISP, and so you really don't have a choice. Mm-hmm. No choice at all, actually. Mm-hmm. That's it. My earpiece just fell out.
We're done.
Whatever.
You got the smoke started coming out of your ears. That's what happens when Jason gets angry. You don't see it in his face or his words. Just the smoke comes out of his ears
in the form of an earpiece.
Earpiece.
It's really
right
weird
out.
How that works. TNT records live every Monday through Friday at 4 p.m. Pacific, 7 p.m. Eastern, 2300 UTC at twit.tv/live. You can be part of the show by emailing us, tnt@twit.tv. Leave us a short voicemail at 260-TNT-SHOW and find us on Twitter. We're at TechNewsTodayTV.
You can subscribe to our show by going to twit.tv/TNT, and you can come see us in person. We love having a live audience. Email tickets at twit.tv. And if you want to tweet at me, if you know what to do besides, you know, for people who can't get an ISP that cares about your privacy or who can't log into their ISP and change what they can and can't see, tweet at me. I'm at Megan Maroney.
Yeah, me too. Add me on that because I want to follow along too, please. I'm at Jason Howell. Thanks to our technical director, Brian. For everything that you do, Brian, appreciate it. Also, thanks to Burke for helping out in the studio and furthering the success of Burke Chat. But we didn't get Burke Chat in there today. Oh, we'll work on that for tomorrow.
Did you have something that you wanted to say?
Anything that you wanted to add
today?
There
we go.
Generally, Burke Chat says VPNs are slower too. Speed, broad browsing, etc. That is very true. Mm-hmm. VPNs definitely come with a trade-off. Privacy for kind of performance hit and all that kind of stuff. So I'm sorry that didn't make it in, Burke, but I'm happy it did eventually. Thanks to Kevin for editing the show, and thanks to you for talking tech with us today. We'll see y'all tomorrow. Bye, everybody. Woo-hoo.